Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Inside the Huddle. We are going over the IU-Rutgers game. We're going to wrap it up, see what went wrong, and just give us your general thoughts on what happened. Is this a one-time thing? Is this, you know, does it go deeper than the product on the field? We saw some different articles out there from different people. We're going to bring in co-host TJ Inman. Nick Holmes should join us sometime. TJ, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Sammy. It is times like this where I wish I was not obligated to be on the show and that I could skip this dismantling and this dissection of the abomination that was that collapse. But we trudge on through the good and the bad.
Yeah, you know, rain or shine, we're here for Hoosier fans. TJ, you know, we were both at the game. We were both sitting in the stands. It was a gorgeous afternoon for football. It was a little chilly at the end, but, you know, at the middle of October, that was about as good as you could get for an Indiana home game. You know, it was a game that IU, we both said, and Nick said, this is a game that IU absolutely has to win. And, you know, you can't put that out lightly, because, you know, you could say that every week just to draw people in and get views and hits and all that stuff. But this is a very winnable game. IU clearly was up by 25, and then it just looked like they took their foot off the gas, lost focus, and credit Rutgers. They made plays and got back in the game. But, TJ, where do they go from here?
Well, they go to East Lansing, physically. Mentally, I don't know. You know, I hate it when, just in sports in general, there, like you said, a must-win label gets placed on, you know, seemingly every game that's even remotely important. And then if the team that said person is rooting for wins, it's, oh, what a massive win. And if they end up losing, then that whole must-win thing is forgotten and they kind of just move on. You know, I'm going to do my best not to do that. We said it was a must win. And it, you know, we did that not only because of the opponents and the kind of the stakes that were placed on it due to you being 4-2 and already losing 2 in a row, but because we knew what was coming up in the schedule, you know, games against Michigan State, Michigan, Iowa, not in that order, but you know, before you finish off the season with 2 road games. So we understood, and I think that most fans understood going into that game, you know, in order for you to get the bare minimum of what could be considered a success, which is 6 wins, and if they get there, I will still consider the season a success because that's the bar that we set. So they would have met that bar. But this was an opportunity to really set yourself up to hit that minimum by just winning one of those final 2 road games. But more importantly, get yourself to 5-2 and feel like much more was possible. And through the third quarter, it certainly looked like it. You know, they played another dominant third quarter, had a run of 28 straight points, and really looked like they could do whatever they wanted on the offensive side of the ball. The defense, you know, made enough plays during that third quarter that the offense was able to together 4 drives that Rutgers didn't look like they had an answer for. You know, a lot of positives to take on that side of the ball. We'll talk about those a little bit. But And then, you know, everything fell apart. And I know that Kevin Wilson and some of the team has said, oh, you know, we don't deal with success very well. Well, you know, what success? I mean, it was the middle of the third quarter, the end of the third quarter. There hadn't been success yet. You hadn't won the game yet. And even if you had, it's 5-2. The job is still far from over on the season. And I just, you know, I understand what they're saying when they say we have a hard time dealing with focus. But then on the other side, you hear about how mature this team is. Well, that doesn't really add up to me when you say you have a hard time dealing with success, but then it's an incredibly mature team. Well, which is it? You know, I'm not entirely sure how that jives. Just I know that there's a lot of frustration. I definitely don't think it was a lack of effort. I don't feel like players just quit trying. I don't feel that way at all. But we talked a lot about dealing with a small margin for error, which is what IU has in the Big Ten. And when you, I guess it's take the foot off the gas, just that tiny bit, and I don't think it's physical, I think it's mental, that then translates to on-field mistakes. When you take that foot off the gas, really bad things happen at this level of college football. And so far, IU has been unable to get over those hurdles against similarly skilled teams. They were able to do it against Southern Illinois in a close game, Florida International in a close game, Western Kentucky in a close game, Wake, they held on, but we kind of, I mean, that Wake Forest game is kind of a harbinger for what has ended up coming against Rutgers. You know, you had a lead that you weren't able to hold on to against Wake because their offense is a disaster. Rutgers was able to take advantage of it. So I think we've seen kind of that, the mental progression of, okay, they're able to hang on in close games by making a couple of plays. Here against Rutgers, they just weren't able to. They couldn't make those plays. You know, we'll talk some about the positives that we can take from it, but overall, you ask where they go from here, that's going to be a really, really tough thing, and it's going to be very impressive if they're able to come out and put together a really good game against Michigan State. You know, going on the road to a top 10 opponent is going to be very difficult to win. But if they can come out, play with a lot of fire, play with a lot of competitiveness, and put together four solid quarters, which, you know, we've yet to see. It's been a roller coaster really every game. So if they're able to put together four solid quarters, maybe that tells you they learned a little something from this, and it would maybe be a positive. But I don't think we'll have any clue about where they go mentally until they take the field. They're saying all the right things, but that's really easy to do. It's much harder to actually put those things into action.
Yeah, you know, TJ, I feel better today than I did on after the game Saturday and on Sunday about the mental makeup of this team, about the skill of this team, and just about where they're going to go. Now, it could be a disaster. This could be that breaking point to where they lose out and go 4-8. But there's still two winnable games, very winnable games on the schedule.
Yeah.
Yes, they're on the road, but Maryland and Purdue are basically tire fires. Maryland just fired their coach. Purdue is looking at staring at a 1-11 season in the eye.
Yes.
And, you know, as much as this one stings, and it does, and I've gotten a lot of text messages from fans who have been fans for 20 years or more saying, hey, I'm done. I can't take this anymore. And look, I get it. I've been a fan, too. I've been following this team since 2002. I haven't seen the upside. I've seen the heartbreakers. I've lived through it. So I get it, and it's very understandable. But the goal is to get to 6-6, and that's still on the table. And until that's off the table, you know, we'll see what happens. And it's very easy to point at this moment as, well, this is, and I said it in my wrap up, this was as bad of a loss as there has been in a long time. It is equal to the loss at Wisconsin that got Coach Lynch fired, even though he came back. You know, he was one play away from 6-6, and who knows, if he goes six and six, you know, it's hard to fire a coach who takes a team to a bowl game. So, you know, you could look at circle the Rutgers game as that moment of, hey, this is a way. Hey, we're better than this. We need to get things going in the right direction, and it points out things that are fundamentally wrong with the program, the athletic department. Basically, like I said, the whole enterprise of Indiana football, you know, might be rotting from the inside out. You were there. It was perfect weather, and there were 30,000 people in the stands for homecoming and a game that they must win. I get that people have been burned in the past. I get that, you know, I've talked to students. There was no buzz around this game on Twitter. There was no buzz around this game on campus, really. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how does IU fix that? I know that winning takes care of everything, but you're going to have to jumpstart this program somehow. And it's not by having Mario Kart races in the first quarter. It's not by taking a great tradition from basketball and moving it to football in the William Tell Overture and shooting off more fireworks. It's not shooting free T-shirts into the alumni section for, you know, the people who are donating thousands of dollars to where you should shoot them at the students who, you know, might stick around for an extra 10 minutes for a chance at a T-shirt. You know, there is something, you know, wrong with the program. But if you get to 6-6, that they're going to have a real decision on their hands, and you can't fire a coach that took Indiana to a bowl game. You just can't. You'll never have any credibility ever again.
Right. Yeah, I think the coaching community is a pretty tight-knit one. Those guys, they definitely compete hard with each other, but they also have a lot in common. They understand what it takes to win, but to even have the job of a college football coach, head coach or otherwise. And, you know, they talk. And I think it's pretty well known kind of throughout the Midwest, if not nationally, how hard the Indiana job is. I don't know about, you know, comparing it to other kind of mid to lower level Big Ten jobs, but it's one of the harder jobs in the conference. There's very little doubt about that. And I think other coaches and other coaching candidates know that. So I always talk about if you choose, and this isn't just IU football, this is in general, and this is not some original thought by me, it's not unique, but, you know, I think it's really important that if you choose to fire a coach or move on from a coach, you need to make sure that the guy you bring in is a clear upgrade. So if you get rid of Kevin Wilson after he goes to a bowl game, like you said, it's going to be very difficult to attract somebody that is that clear upgrade, because they're going to think, wow, he got to the benchmark, right? He got to a bowl game. He was recruiting well by IU standards, and they let him go. So what does that tell me my chances of sticking around are if I'm not guy that you're offering the job to? So, yeah, I think that if he does manage to get to a bowl game, which I'm hopeful for, you know, I want to make it very clear, I am hoping that Kevin Wilson succeeds. Number one, I like his velocity with football. I like that he's aggressive. I like that the offense is entertaining to watch. I know that, you know, the program is far from perfect, and he is not a perfect head coach or even close to it, but I want to see him succeed, and I hope that he's able to get to a bowl game. I would enjoy going to a bowl game for IU football, and I want to see that happen. I'm not one of those people that says, well, we need a new start, so I hope he fails and that they're forced to make a move. And I know that there are a lot of people that feel that way, and I guess I understand that. I've heard a lot of that with IU basketball, where they're hoping it gets to the point where they have to fire Tom Crean. You know, I just don't understand that as a fan, how you can kind of hope for your program to fail. But I know a lot of people do feel that way. Just in general, though, like you said, those two road games that they have left, plus, you know, three other games that, while I would say at the very least IU is going to be probably double-digit underdogs in all those games, unless something were to happen to, you know, C.J. Beathard at Iowa. He's banged up, but if he were to be out for the year, or Michigan loses a couple key players or whatever, you could see those become single-digit underdog games. But it's going to be unlikely that IU wins those, but not impossible to steal one somehow. But I think it's going to be important for the football team to not think about their previous failures on the road in the Big Ten, and just focus on, okay, we need to beat Maryland. And then after you do that, okay, we need to beat Purdue. You just need to separate those, look at them as single entities, not worry about the bowl game stakes, not worry about the job for Kevin Wilson's stake, don't worry about any of that stuff, and just try to focus on winning a game against Maryland, winning a game against Purdue, and if you're able to do that, you can accomplish your goals. So I think that's going to be the key thing for this coaching staff, is to get the players to understand, yes, Saturday was a really bad blown opportunity. Study where the mistakes were made. Do everything you can not to repeat them on the offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, the special teams miscue. Do everything you can not to repeat those mistakes. Study that, and then, you know, approach it as we have to move on. You have to learn the lessons, but also put the frustration to bed and move on. And that's a really tough task, but it's what the coaches and the players have to do now.
Yep. And Nick Holmes is joining us now. Nick, we've talked a little bit about what kind of went wrong. I'm taking the foot off the gas a little bit, and a little bit about what's next. What were your takeaways from the game, and what is the thinking going forward?
You know, first, some encouraging signs is penalties are something that I continue to harp on, and those were considerably better this week. Nate Sudfeld looked, for three quarters, as good as Nate Sudfeld has looked probably since his sophomore year. So that was obviously encouraging to see. We got a new weapon in Mike Majette, so that was, I'm sure you guys have talked about him some.
We have not. No, we haven't. Go ahead. Expound on,
know,
Mike Majette. I was thrilled to see him play. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, a lot was, you know, I believe, you know, when we brought him in, there was some uncertainty as to where he might land on offense or defense. And I know he started out a little bit at wide receiver, and it looks like he's found a place in the backfield, which, you know, he's that nice change of pace from what we have with Jordan Howard and Devine Redding. He's got a slender build, so he's able to, you know, find a hole on stretch plays and get up the field pretty easily. So that was really encouraging to see. And I even asked Coach Wilson at the post press conference the other night about him, and Coach said that he'd looked good in practice, but even he was surprised by how quickly and easily that he acclimated to that position in the game. But as far as what went wrong, it's like you said, it was like they took their foot off the gas. And the problem with playing so many young players along both sides of the ball is sometimes you lack that killer instinct, that ability to just step on your opponent's throat. And I said that up in the press box to some of the other people around. I said, they really just need to step on their throat. And every six, you know, next possession, it was just like, all right, you got to do something here. You really need to. You need to get three or six or whatever it takes. You just need to make sure that you get some more momentum, and it just quickly unraveled. And it was just kind of like watching a car wreck in slow motion. You couldn't do anything about it. You wanted to, but things just got away. And moving forward, TJ, you're right. Anything less than a double-digit deficit as an underdog in these next three games will be surprising. You got Michigan State, who admittedly hasn't looked great the last 3 weeks, beating Purdue by 7, Rutgers by 7, winning on a fluke play against Michigan. I mean, they're not playing at their top level, but they're undefeated. And then you got a bye week following Iowa, who is currently undefeated, and then Michigan. Yeah, they've got 2 losses, but there aren't too many teams in America with 2 losses as good as Michigan. So, like you said, it's going to be looking at I would like to see them win one of those 3 games, but if not, it's going to be taking the show on the road and winning 2 Big Ten Conference games. And at this point, under Coach Wilson, they have 1 conference road win. So that'll be a test.
Yeah, and, you know, it looks bleak right now. And this team has bounced back. It's looked bleak before, and they bounced back nicely. But, you know, we'll see if this team comes out and lays an egg on Saturday. Maybe that buy-in isn't as good as everybody says it is. Maybe, you know, there's people doubting. But I've heard, you know, talking to people today at Media Monday and texting some people who know players, it's, you know, they're all in. They're angry. And yeah, it might be coach speak, but, you know, I expect a good effort on Saturday and a good game. If you know, who knows? Anything could happen. Just take last Saturday, for example. Indiana, you know, teams I think were 121-0 with a 25-point lead, and Indiana loses. Well, mm-hmm. Michigan was up by 2 with 10 seconds left and punting, and they lost. So anything could happen, and that's the attitude that they have to play with and come out with. Now, I don't blame fans for jumping ship. It is what it is. They've been burned a lot, and I understand. But, you know, that's a whole other deal and another part. But there are things from this Rutgers game that the offense looked great at times for the first 3 quarters. You're right, both of you guys. Mike Majette looked great. He's a nice – he gives you a dynamic that Howard and Redding don't give you. And they kind of – they really miss Howard. I thought that if Sudfeld played, they'd be okay. But they did miss Howard's bruising style of running and really could not kill that clock late in the game, whereas, you know, they became one-dimensional. And usually when we say they become one-dimensional, they don't go for 400-and-something yards, 464 yards passing. But that's what happened. And when you become one-dimensional passing, it stops the clock and lengthens the game. We all know. We were there for 4.5 hours, so we yep. know how that works.
Yep. I think they do miss Howard. You're absolutely right. And people say, well, and understandably, well, the offense wasn't the problem. And I totally agree with that. The offense did more than enough to win. But if they had Jordan Howard, which, you know, he did warm up, it was pretty clear he was not going to play based on some of the ways they were lining up pregame with Sudfeld and Devine Redding taking kind of those mock play snaps. But Howard did do more this week than he did the previous week. It's possible he goes against Michigan State. I would say that it's very likely that when IU comes back from their bye week, that Jordan Howard will be back. If not, then there's something much more serious going on than just the ankle. But I think where they absolutely did miss him was on those end of game situation plus the 3rd and short. Indiana. Really, really bad on third downs for the 2nd week in a row. And so I want to ask you guys, if Jordan Howard continues to be absent, what would you like to see happen on those 3rd and shorts? Because right now it's just not working. There were multiple times IU attempted to hand it off to Devine Redding on 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2 or even 4th and 1, go up the middle. And he was getting hit as soon as he touched the ball. I'm not blaming Devine Redding for that at all. I think he played pretty well on Saturday.
He just didn't really have a chance on most of those short yardage failures. So what would you guys like to see happen on third and shorts Jordan Howard is still not out there?
I mean, I know this isn't part of their base package at all. I know they don't run with Sudfeld under center very often, but when you're 6 foot six, 6 foot seven, lining him up under center, a sneak, even, you know, a little double running back action, put one of the tight ends, maybe Corsaro or Cooper, line him up as a fullback and let him lead for Devine or whoever else you got. Alex Rodriguez is obviously your biggest bodied back left on the roster. But yeah, I think, you know, the pistol, when you're trying to gain 1 or 2 yards, you're already lining up 3 to 4 yards behind a line of scrimmage. It takes a lot more. And so, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind to see a little bit under center. I know that's, like I said, that's not typical for them, but it seems like it would, from at least from my perspective, it'd make things a lot easier.
Yeah, that was one of the big questions they asked at today's press conference. Was, hey, why don't you just sneak it with your 6'5" quarterback? And Will said, you know, Sudfeld's ankle wasn't 100%, and that, you know, in order to push off of that left foot, you have to have some strength there. And maybe he didn't have that. But, yeah, I'd like to see, you know, maybe put Darius Latham back there again and go goal line situations on those third and ones and fourth and ones. He's a guy who, you know, we've seen him back there before against Wake Forest, and maybe that'll help. And maybe even give him the ball if he could handle it. But it is definitely concerning that they can't pick up these third and ones or third and shorts and fourth and shorts. Wilson also alluded to some, you know, maybe even throw the ball. Roll Sudfeld out and throw the ball if you're not comfortable running him with him. But, I mean, hey, look, the Patriots and the Colts both did it last night. Now, I'm not saying that it should run a fake punt that looks like the annexation of Puerto Rico, but, you know, do something. Make it, you know, if you run it a couple – they've shown on tape that they run it every time on these plays. Do a play-action pass and roll a tight end short for 2 yards. Do something like that. So there are different things to go around. You know, health was definitely a factor in that. You know, they've snuck Sudfeld before for touchdowns. I think it's just that he didn't have quite the push that they needed to get up there. He also mentioned some blocking things. You know, you need to get a gap, and there's been some blocking problems, which leads me to my next concern, is this offensive line. Andy Graham was speaking to me today about how maybe the offensive line, you know, they were busting plays, you know, for big yardage in the run game, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and they didn't change the plays. You know, it wasn't, you know, because of a bad play call. It was, you know, what happened to this offensive line was supposed to be the strength of this team. And it's got two very good players in Jason Spriggs and Dan Feeney, but they haven't shown it in these late game situations. You had pressure on Sudfeld on some of those throws that went for interceptions, and you couldn't get the run game going in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think that those are all good points. The one time they did get creative down near the goal line, they were able to, which they did a nice job with red zone efficiency this game. But, you know, the one time they got creative on a short yardage situation down near the goal line, Sudfeld could have, you know, walked 10 yards before anybody touched him, and he was able to just kind of jog into the end zone. So, I think whatever they need to do, I really hope we don't. Unless Howard is back to 100% by next week, which I feel better about third and one if it's handed off to him. But unless he's back, I really hope we don't see more, you know, halfback dives to Devine Redding on third and one next week, because it's a pretty proven track record these past 2 weeks that doesn't work. And if you continue to do it, you're asking to punt, which doesn't go very well. But, you know, we've gone a whole podcast without talking about the defense, which is why they lost on Saturday more than anything else. I just the defense was completely and totally incapable of even slowing Rutgers down in that fourth quarter. It was maddening to see it slipping away, and knowing every time Rutgers got out there, it just felt like there's no way that they're going to get a stop. Rutgers just got into rhythm, and IU's defense was unable to provide any pass rush. They were unable to create any negative plays to get Rutgers off schedule. You know, they had their moments, especially in the third quarter, where they played pretty well. Marcus Oliver continues to have a real strong season. He's been a real standout on the defense. But overall, it was just a really bad day. It was a big step back for the defense. Hopefully they can right the ship against Connor Cook and the Spartans. We'll preview that on Wednesday. But, you know, weak defense, and there are still definitely things they can clean up and improve. But they scored 52. That should have been more than enough to get the win against pretty much anybody. And the defense's inability to get Rutgers off the field in the fourth quarter is why we're not having a show about IU being 5-2 and talking about bowl games they could go to. So hopefully that they are able to rebound and take a step forward this Saturday. Like you said, Sammy, I expect them to play with a lot of fire. If we see a really poor effort on Saturday, which will be the first time all season, you know, let's make it clear, they haven't been blown out yet this year. The Penn State game was frustrating, but it wasn't a total blowout. But if we see them just really get manhandled on Saturday, I think it's a pretty clear indication of where the mental rebound and the mental state of this team is. So it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, I agree. And unfortunately, we are out of time. I should have scheduled this show for 45 minutes. But, yeah, you know, the defense, it's self-explanatory. They didn't make enough plays to win the game. They played decently up until the third quarter. I think they only, you know, IU stopped them on 7 of 11 drives. You know, they blocked a couple extra points. But then they rattled off 7 or 8 third down conversions in a row. And it just, you know, it just looked like a total team collapse. You can't blame it on the offense or the defense or the special teams. This was a team loss. And, you know, we'll see how they bounce back, and hopefully they do. You know, it's much more fun to do these things when they win. But we'll see. TJ, Nick, thanks, guys, for taking time out of your evening to talk with us, and enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Stay with it, Hoosier fans. I know it's really frustrating, it's really hard, but stick with it, and when IU does break through, it's going to be glorious.
Yeah, and that's going to do it for our wrap-up show for Rutgers. We'll be back previewing the Brass Platoon game against Michigan State. Indiana hasn't claimed the Brass Platoon since 2006. They haven't been victorious in East Lansing since 2001. But it is a trophy game. It's probably the best medicine IU needs to wash this bad feeling out of their mouth. It's something to refocus on, something to rally around, and we'll see how they do. Thanks for joining us as always, and continue reading HoosierHuddle.com. We thank you for your support.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.